This is the Restaurant Technology Guys podcast, helping you run your restaurant better.
Welcome back to the Restaurant Technology Guys podcast. I appreciate those listeners out there. As always, it's so great to have you guys out on the airwaves. Today, we are joined by a very special guest, somebody that I've known in and around the industry for a while. We are joined by Mr. Phil Crawford. Phil, why don't you say hi to our audience and tell everybody a little bit about who you are.
It's great to be here. As always, Jeremy, it's good to see you and obviously hear you at the same time in our post-COVID net world. You're right. I head up the technology over at CKE Restaurants, the parent company to Carl's and Hardee's, 3,000 domestic restaurants and 1,000 international and growing. Have an amazing history for both brands. Carl's is in over 80 years and Hardee's over 60. So a lot of good tenure, a lot of good people, a lot of great products, and overall just a great company to be with.
Awesome. And awesome. Well, and from your perspective, I guess for those that aren't familiar who you are, Phil, and I know you don't love talking about yourself, but I want people to understand that you've been a lot of different places and done a lot of really cool stuff with tech before we dig into kind of what you've been up to most lately at CKE. And, you know, yours and my paths have run into each other quite a bit in different shows and different places that you've been at. So why don't you give a quick history of kind of where you've been at maybe the last 10 years or so, because again, I think it's going to give some context to the what and the why as to how you're really, I guess, changing the way CKE is going to the market.
Yeah, look, I've been in this industry for a long time. It's kind of in my blood, as you can say now. And I've been blessed to work with some amazing companies out of Southern California, you know, with the Yard House restaurants before it was acquired by Darden. That was an amazing stint and stood up all the different amazing technologies there, from the audiovisual to the beer systems to, you know, latest and greatest point of sale systems, and the list goes on and on and on. Obviously, even with you, which is kind of fun.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I was telling somebody that story. Phil and I have done business together with the with some recipe management stuff that we did at CBS. So pretty cool.
Exactly. Then after that, moved on to a small little burger thing out in New York called Shake Shack, and that was an amazing run. While there, 4 years there, and helped take the company public and build a lot of the technology stack that's still in play today. From mobile ordering to, you know, store-based systems to above store cloud systems. And again, the list goes on and on as well. And then last, you know, after that was a couple of years in Godiva. So I kind of left the industry, got the worldwide tour, as they say, as a lot of folks call me, the Loompa Oompa, now that I came back. So that was actually fun. It was an amazing concept, you know, to take that and understand what they can do worldwide, especially from a supply chain and logistics standpoint. And then, you know, finally, I landed back at CKE because I guess kind of missed the industry, right? I missed all my peers and friends, and I missed food and beverage and what the hospitality industry is all about. And so with all these different scents I've had, I've been, you know, fortunate enough to work with some amazing people outside of the amazing brand to really kind of help us showcase the different technology needs. And I've always been an innovator, never been a guy that just wants to run a 9-to-5 desk. So that really have allowed me to kind of experiment and take different technology risks where a lot of companies wouldn't. And I think in the long run, it's actually paid off. So it's actually helped me foster my career, my own personal growth as well. But, you know, more importantly, it's just kind of kept me grounded of who I am and keep close to the people I really aspire to, you know, hang out with.
I love it. And you did some pretty cool stuff, definitely in New York. I wasn't as familiar when you were at Godiva, but intimately familiar with what you were doing at Yard House because we were working together, and then, you know, a little bit. And then I was admiring from afar, and I know we've caught up at different trade shows, some cool stuff there. Well, for those that aren't familiar, because you guys aren't in all 50 states, and we do have some international listeners, what is Carl's and Hardee's? Talk to me a little bit about those. They've got a very storied history, and really kind of let's talk about the evolution, revolution that they've been through over the last few years, because they've joined forces, and you know they've got a little bit distinct personalities, but they're coming together, and then we'll talk about kind of what you've been doing on the tech side with both brands.
Sure. So we're in 37 states here, you know, and obviously if you kind of take right off the west of the Mississippi is Carl's, and to the right of the Mississippi is Hardee's. Hardee's and Carl's joined forces probably about 5 to 7 years ago, consolidated offices, moved out of Anaheim, Carpinteria, and out of, you know, St. Louis, and landed in here in Nashville. And in doing so, they really kind of created a unified brand. So a lot of the similar products are on both palettes, but really Carl's Jr. is a lunch and dinner burger joint, in essence. Mm-hmm. And Hardee's is more about your biscuits and breakfast. But we have burgers there as well. And there's some really cult followings. Again, as I alluded to when we first started talking, I mean, Carl's has 80 plus years history
Yep.
In Southern California and beyond. And then Hardy says 60 plus years. So, you know, it's generational franchisees, which are great partners. It's generational folks inside of our own four walls that work for corporate. And the nostalgia of the brand has been around and it continues to grow and foster. And especially with the advent of technology, the company itself has had to pivot and shift, right? We've had to learn to adapt like so many other companies through COVID and really become, you know, a relevant restaurant QSR where in the past we may not have been. And both brands have been really accepting to that, realizing that you can't live on your laurels. It's great you've been around for so long, but you know, people and brands need to evolve and reinvent themselves in a variety of ways. So this was an amazing opportunity for a lot of us. Senior leadership around the horn came together and really kind of drove product innovation and store redesign innovation, but also technology foundation.
Yeah, I love it. And you're going on what, year and a half, maybe 2 years there? You've been there. I mean, you haven't been there quite 2 years, right?
No, yeah, I'm 18 months. I'm still, okay. Believe it or not, in that overall of 80 years, I'm still a newbie.
You're still a pup. Well, yes. So talk to me, what did you walk into? You know, you talked about kind of what you inherited when you got there. I mean, I know because I, you know, recently moved from Southern California, for those that know and the longtime listeners. But for those that aren't familiar, I'm a regular at Carl's but historically it has not been a very tech forward brand. They're, you know, being able to do online ordering, being able to do third party delivery, being able to do, you know, even some of the innovations of order confirmation boards. Most of the stores didn't have even stuff like that in the drive through scenarios, not digital menu boards. I mean, I would go to Carl's on a regular basis. There's a lot that we talk about on the podcast, and I'm guessing when you got there, based on my own guest experience, just as a pure guest, not as a technologist, there wasn't a whole lot of that. And so why don't you talk about what you inherited 18, 24 months ago, and then kind of what your top priorities were as you sat and looked at the strategy for the brand, and then we can talk specifics about the first few things you implemented over there.
Yeah, look, I think a thing they inherited is really kind of obsolescence, right? The brands themselves, again, kind of stuck in the laurels and didn't kind of need to evolve. And they always, everybody talks about digital transformation. Well, you've either transformed or you're not. Mm-hmm. And, you know, everything was legacy you can possibly imagine. Again, a lot of that is also because of the culture and also because of the nostalgic of the brands. They've been around and they've kind of had institutionalized is the best way to say it.
Yep.
So coming in there, we kind of needed to throw out the bad and create the new. And anything from infrastructure, it was anything from, you know, cloud-based systems, you know, new cloud infrastructure, which we've got AWS or GPC or Snowflake, but also more foundational store-based systems, network, point of sale, obviously mobile order and pay, digital menu boards. So really the idea was coming in and out of COVID, they had a unique opportunity to redefine themselves as a brand, both brands, I should say.
Yep.
And to do so, we had to take some strategic risks of what the brands could do, but also the franchisees would adapt. It's been on the strategic roadmap for a long time there, right? It's been on there. We need to do this. We need to do this. We need to do this. I think it just finally took the catalyst of the pandemic, but also to getting the right band together, quite frankly, getting the right leadership together, getting the right drive together, but also really getting the franchisees behind us, as well as corporate, to put our money where our mouth is. We're going to do this. We're going to do it first for our corporate restaurants. And we're going to prove it out, and then everybody else can get on board and move forward. And also, if you look at the competitive set in the QSR industry, we've been behind, you know, and in doing so actually kind of gave us a little bit of an advantage. We could find out what other brands have done right, but also what they've done wrong and not repeat the history, but also make it unique for both individual concepts. So we don't alienate our guests that have been loyal to us for so many years.
I love that. And I say it often on the podcast when people will say, well, should I implement this? And it's like, well, it depends. Like the answer is always, it depends. And you know, you haven't been a consultant at different points in your life. It's like, it depends. It depends on what you want your brand to look like. It depends on what you want your brand to do. And it's not a one size fits all. It's truly it depends on what it is that the brand is looking to do, what their benefit statements are. Why are they looking to do it? Technology for technology's sake is not needed. It's technology to solve true business problems and or take you to a new level.
Yeah, it's funny you say that, because I think a lot of folks had this vision to be the next Chick-fil-A from a technology standpoint, right? Or, you know, my predecessor of Shake Shack or Sweetgreen, leaning on the different concept they want to go. Or be Chipotle might be the best example out of all. But sometimes you just need to keep it simple, stupid, right? And go with core foundational stuff that you can make the big dynamic impact on. But you got to build the foundation of a house. I always use this analogy all the time. Like, I'm not going to go buy $1 million roof and not have a strong foundation to support it.
Yep.
So let's do that first. And now we can get into the later stages once we get the foundation built. I mean, we're playing with AI. are playing with machine learning, stuff we never could have done unless we did the core basics.
Yep.
And sometimes it's okay to get grounded in the basics and just restart. And that's what we had to do because we couldn't get to the far right unless you can start in the far left. It's the crawl, walk, run approach.
I love that. And one of the things that I heard you say as you were going through kind of your guys' technological changes over the last couple of years or last 18 months as you've been there is you understood where the brand was at and you understood where it was going to go. And then you got buy-in. You got buy-in from your corporate leadership. You got buy-in from even the franchisees with a plan that you said, we're gonna eat our own dog food. We're going to try this first. We're not going to throw. And all too often I see franchise groups, they'll say, oh, you're a brand new store as a franchise. Corporate hasn't opened up a store in 5 years. We're going to throw this new tech out at you and make it your problem. Mm-hmm. And they end up biting, you know, it ends up biting them in the backside because they just don't end up. Talk to me a little bit about that sale process. Because ultimately you have four or five different constituencies that you've got to sell to. You've got to sell to your enterprise. You know, you got to sell to your finance group, your marketing group, you know, all your executives in your own organization. And then you still have to go sell the franchisees because they're ultimately the ones that need to pay for it and implement it on the non-corporate stores long-term. And if you can only get it at corporate, and I know McDonald's ran into some of those problems.
Yeah.
And there was some, you know, some press around that where they were like, we're going really hard at kiosk. And then the franchisee said, screw you, that's going to cost too much. And no matter how good the technology was, it didn't matter if the franchisees weren't going to buy off on it. So talk to me a little bit about that sale process before we dig into kind of some of the hardcore tech that you guys have put in.
Sure. I think the number one thing is having aligned with my peers of leadership. Like we all have to be holding hands and going in the right direction and singing kumbaya. Mm-hmm. If one of us is not, we don't have alignment.
Yep.
So that was the first step. I think also the second step is both brands knew they had to do something. They just didn't have the right architect or leader to lead them across that finish line. And what I had done here is not rocket science. Right? There's mm-hmm. plenty of case studies to find the right technologies move together. But I think the number one thing, as you kind of alluded to it a second ago, is we needed to go in and prove an ROI, putting it in our own corporate restaurant and show that there's a consumer demand for it. Yep. But also that the industry itself has pivoted so rapidly. Either you adapt or you die.
Yep.
People were riding the coattails of COVID. How long is this going to run? QSR's amazing doing business, yada, yada, yada. I'm like, it's going to end at some mm-hmm. time. And we have a unique opportunity right now to capture our sales, quite frankly, but also convert our consumers because the consumers themselves are evolving. They're evolving to like grandma and grandpa grabbing up an iPhone and using ordering through yes. DoorDash and delivery. And they had kind of the pieces there. I think getting marketing involved and finance involved and all the different parts were to show this is really where the industry is going. Let's no longer just be a follower or not even, you know, being in the game. Let's get to the game and let's show what we can do on our own accord. Again, by not changing the brand standards and so forth. The franchisees themselves, a lot of our franchisees are extremely smart.
Yep.
They have other concepts, Wingstops, Arby's, that have already these entire digital ecosystems. So they see the benefit. I think they just needed to show the plan, the architecture, the partnerships we created. But more importantly, we had to put our money where our mouth is and saying, if we're going to do this by date X and it costs Y, we need to hit those dates and stick to it or our costs. Because yeah. if we don't, we lose credibility. And I think the company in the past, the leadership, probably had a lack of credibility because it was, to your point, you go do it. Tell me how the results are. You take all the risk. I get all the reward.
Yep.
We flipped it on its head and said, no, we're going to do both. But if we prove it out, you're going to go on the warpath with us, correct? And lo and behold, it wasn't easy at first. I'm not going to lie to you. So not everybody came in and turned around mm-hmm. checks. We proved it out. We had some of our great franchisee partners, some of the biggest ones around the nation, really adapt the technology because they had the vision as well. And then it just snowballed. And it snowballed in such a positive manner that, you know, we've now rolled it out to over 2,600 restaurants nationwide in an incredible wow. quick fashion and pace, loyalty and app, and we're working on other new technologies to get us more relevant because that's what our consumers demand.
I love it. I love it. And I think, I mean, we talk about it often also on the podcast is why does technology lag behind, you know, restaurant technology specifically. And I think a lot of times it's because people have been burnt. They've been mm-hmm. promised all of this panacea of everything's going to work perfectly and you're not going to have any problems. And the truth is it often underdelivers or people set the wrong expectations. And so I love that you started with, where are we trying to go? This is my vision for it. And you got people on board and then you were able to execute. The fact that you guys have gotten so much done in 18 months is incredible.
Yeah, it's a true testament to the team and hiring the right people and getting, again, the band together in the right direction and all singing the same tune. I also think that if you look at where the company itself is going to and where consumers are, like, it's a unique opportunity in a technologist professional career where you can actually have these kind of broad stroke approaches that people adopt to.
Yeah.
But I think from a leadership standpoint, it took all the leaders to say, look, we're not perfect.
Mm-hmm.
We're gonna own our wins and we're gonna own our losses. Right. And we're gonna do this together as a partnership. And I think that was probably the most monumental thing that they have never heard before. It was always, you know, barking down orders from the glass castles. I just have a different tact. Like, mm-hmm. I'm gonna get my hands dirty and I'm gonna go with you with it and all the way through the end. And at the end we'll raise champagne glasses when it's all done. Not the opposite.
That's awesome. I love that idea. So you've thrown out a lot of different things that you've done. So why don't we start with kind of, you know, you had to build the infrastructure. I think infrastructure, making sure that you've got the good tech in the store. Don't necessarily need to talk brand names, but something that's scalable, something that's cloud-based, something that, yeah, that gives you the ability to do those things. Talk to me about kind of the layering on top, but you didn't have web ordering. You didn't have third-party delivery integrated. You didn't have loyalty. You didn't have a lot of the things that I think are table stakes. So why don't we talk a little bit about where did you start first once you kind of knew that you had a stable infrastructure in the store and a technology that can run the store day in and day out for guests that are coming into the drive-thru and coming up to the counter? After you went there, talk to me a little bit about kind of how did you evaluate your steps and what were the first things you took on, the second things, and so on?
Yeah, so I have to give a lot of credit to my team, right? I inherited a pretty amazing team that had already done a lot of the heavy lifting in advance. So Ryan Mollenkopf, who's in charge of my network infrastructure, and his entire team was rolling this technology out starting years ago, you know, and it just got accelerated to the catalyst of change again, back to the franchise adoption. You know, Melissa Alves was my director of restaurant technologies and was rolling out Parbrink and standardizing on Expient. So there's a lot of great people doing a lot of great things, you know, in motion. And Dave Collins on the corporate app side, and Tom Marino on the support side. So we had some good core functional things going. It's how do you unite the clans? Right? Mm. How do you unite all of them to go in sequence so things can be done first and foremost? So it was finishing off projects number one, finishing off the POS standardization, finishing off the network infrastructure standardization, finishing off the support layers, and then going into picking what does this widget look like?
Uh-huh.
Like, what key players do you work together with? Do you host it yourself? Do you have somebody else do it? And really, it goes back to a model approach. We're a big enough chain that we have to play with the big enough players.
Yep.
And that's not always the case for everybody. We needed to be with the best of breed from Punch, from Loyalty, you know, Ola from Middleware, and then Particle from CDP that needed to integrate with our entire tech stack at the point of sale levels and obviously in the cloud. And that over-encompassing architecture and those decision matrices really is what kicked off the foundational work that needed to be done to get everything up and running. And again, it was also stage gated, right? We're going to do our own backyard,
yep,
and we're going to test, and we're going to fail fast and learn faster. That old phrase we all repeat over and over again. And in doing so, it allowed us the flexibility to make those mistakes, but also then rapidly deploy in partnership with the franchisees. So we had, again, those franchisees that worked with us as guinea pigs, for lack of a better term, and really took the risk with us as well. Which is, again, is really important. Obviously, we took more risk because we wanted to make sure it worked.
Well, and it was your own store, so you could beat them up if it was broken. You know,
yeah,
you could control the messaging.
And, you know, and then again, working with the marketing teams, Chad Crawford and, you know, Jason Seeley, and then my director of IT, Drive Digital, Mike Souter, and again, formulating that strategy and the plan of how do we want to tackle this monstrosity that is mobile order and pay, mm-hmm, integrated delivery, and then obviously loyalty. And, you know, as much as people don't like the delivery providers, look, they save the industry in so many ways. Yep. I think it becomes a true symbiotic relationship with them. And we sat down with them and we showed them our strategy. We sat down with Olo and showed them our strategy. We showed them the franchisees. I mean, it's continual conversation, but the only way you get this done is if you work together in partnership and collaborate. And that's really what really nailed this across the board, internal and external.
Got ya. So you threw out a whole bunch of names, and for those not familiar, so again, I know what all of them are, but I'd love your help to educate. So
yeah,
you threw out Olo. Olo is a big publicly traded company now. You and I have both been working with their team for quite some time. I think you've had previous stints with the team at Olo, but what did Olo do for the brand? Talk to me a little bit about that, because I'd love to have people understand what they should expect. Olo, for those that aren't familiar, is an online ordering company that does a lot more than just online ordering. But why don't you talk about what Olo did for you guys, particularly as a brand, and how it benefited, you know, the corporate stores, the franchisees, and whatnot.
So yeah, you're right. I had history with Olo back at Shake Shack. Right, Olo was the ecosystem that tied in the guest experience in at the point of sale and created a frictionless ordering solution. That's basically what it comes down to. And with us here, we know we decided to take a couple different components of Olo. Having two different point of sale systems, I had to have one central way to data manage all the ordering ecosystems. So if you go to a Carl's or a Hardee's, they might be owned by different franchisees that have different POS systems. From the guest standpoint, it has to look seamless. You can't flip it. You can't say, mm-hmm. you got to go to this environment first and so forth.
Yeah, go download this app or go to this website. It's like, no, it doesn't work that way.
Exactly. So Olo worked with us in order. They did some custom development for us for our drive-thru because we're a little bit different in how we operate the business, which is an amazing partnership. We used them for obviously their native API. So we built our own apps.
Okay.
Right. Through Hathaway, which is a development company out of Santa Barbara. And we leveraged their API calls for everything to do Rails. Rails and their ecosystem is to integrate DoorDash, Postmates, Uber, and Grubhub. Right. We also use Dispatch. We can do delivery through our own channels, through our own branded websites and branded apps. And then obviously the entire ecosystem for curbside pickup, drive-through pickup, in-store pickup. We're experimenting now with QR ordering inside their dining rooms as they open up. So they're kind of the glue that ties all the different disparate systems into one larger ecosystem where data can flow seamlessly between the consumer and us. And so orders can get injected and we can have full visibility as well as full transactional data going into our systems.
I love that. And again, I'm going to reiterate some of what Phil said, because again, he and I talk tech every day and some of these listeners will text me or tweet me and go, all right, he talked about this. I need to understand. So Olo's got a couple of different products. They've got, you know, kind of their standard online ordering as well as an API. Phil says his team is using their API to be able to go deploy the app, which is amazing. Then you've got their Rails product, which is the ability for you to take an order online and flow it through to one of the third-party delivery companies to be able to manage that and still get it into the store, but manage DoorDash, Grubhub, and whoever the brand chooses to deal with. Then they've got their Dispatch product, which can either dispatch it to one of those third-party delivery companies or can dispatch it to, you know, your own delivery drivers, as Phil talked about. And so it sounds like Olo is a real big part of your digital, you know, tech strategy as far as what you're doing there. And you said they're a great partner. Was that just, hey, rinse and repeat what I know you've done for other people? You talked about, you know, you guys have been fortunate that some people have cut their teeth and made the mistakes that you guys were able to run it right on those coattails. Or was it really, hey, we've got a lot of unique stuff here at Carl's and Hardee's and we need to do some stuff a little bit differently?
It actually was both. So The history means one thing, right? Knowing Noah Glass and all the individuals over there that are, you know, been doing this for a while, but they also have the breadth of scope, right? We're 3,000 restaurants. I need an enterprise solution. There are other solutions that are out there that I'm sure probably would do an okay job, but they just don't have the big moniker brand that they've done in the past. And with our aggressive patterns, we couldn't take the risk. Mm-hmm. So going with a tried true solution that, again, my peers have used, other large QSRs have used, or even fast casual full service restaurants have used, it almost is kind of like a no-brainer.
Yep.
Right. When it comes down to it. It also goes down to a model, right? We also knew what our loyalty play was going to be, as well as our CDP, our customer data platform, was going to be. So who integrates with your nucleus? And you build off the nucleus. So if you take your diagram and you have all these systems and you got to connect the lines, as we say, to make it all work together, which one has the most lines you can connect into?
Oh. Yep. Yeah, no, and another one of your contemporaries, the CIO, says all the time, CTO, he's like, you've got to figure out how to architect it. You don't want it plumbed with this little connection that's like, it's a one-way path. You got to make sure that you architect these things, because if not, the guest experience ultimately suffers. And so I love the fact that you guys thought about that, because at the end of the day, your whole story of you can't go to one app for ordering, you know, in this region, but in this region, you can't use the app or the loyalty or whatever, because it's not integrated. And I actually was just at a brand that is converting point of sale. And I tried to do loyalty the other day and they said, I'm sorry, we can't do this until May 15th. And I'm like, kidding me? It was, you know, 3 weeks later. And I actually sent something to our CIO going, really? And it was, it was bad though, at the end of the day, because you look at it, me as a guest, and I'm a restaurant guy, I went in and I knew that they had just changed point of sale. And my wife's like, well, why can't I get my points? Why can't I redeem my $5 off and whatnot? And that guest experience puts something in my mind that says they didn't architect it. They didn't do like you had done. And I'm not saying this to be like, oh, look at how great you and your team are, but that matters. That matters to the guest experience. I'm a restaurant technologist. If my mother-in-law had gone there, she'd have been like, screw these people. I wanted my free shake and I didn't get my free shake, you know, kind of thing. And so it's a very true thing that you've got to make sure that you think about those things, because your guest experience can suffer if you don't.
Well, and again, you know, it comes back to, you only have one chance to make an impression.
Yep.
And I can only launch one time. Because if I really upset those people, you're not coming back. You're a great case study right there by that whole experience.
Yep.
But also, you know, it's also the debate that'll go on till the end of time: buy versus build.
Yep.
Right. We had a very strategic, quick, hit the ground running roadmap, and I don't have the luxury of time. So partnering with a company that's done it is helpful. But again, also the premise that we have one shot to launch this. With success, again, everything's going to have an issue. Mm-hmm. You're going to expect it going in, there's going to be problems. I can't go all of a sudden roll out one solution and go, whoops, sorry, world, I screwed up, back the whole thing out and go right, because the damage will be done. So
yeah,
you really have to make sure that those kind of alignments are in place before you pull the trigger per se.
So why did you guys decide to build your own app then? You know, and again, you talked about buying, and I love that idea. I love that idea in partnering with an Olo, because they've got a lot built. You partner with Punchh, they've got a lot of that loyalty stuff figured out, and you know the CDP pieces. I'd love to dig into both the Punchh and the CDP pieces here in a few minutes. But why did you guys decide to build your own app then? You know, if that's the case, and I know that there was some thought that went into it, and I'd love to hear your thinking, because I know our audience will take a lot from it.
So Olo has a white label app called Serve. We looked at utilizing it. Yes, it would have been cheaper. But again, though, we also have to have the marketing side of this. I'm putting my marketing on for a second. It needs to be brand on. And being brand on, it has to be identifiable to our consumers. Mm-hmm. And so in doing so, we do business a little bit differently than a white label app might do.
Yep.
Right? So building our own through a partnership with Hathaway was the least path of resistance. Because we could get all the different things we wanted to have done, leveraging the APIs through Olo, but still be brand specific of who we are, the way our orders flow, the way our drive-through systems work, the way our guest interactions are, the way we do our burger builds.
Yep.
And some of the native apps that are out there, the white label native apps, just didn't have that functionality or flexibility to do so. I also think that as we had a longer term plan of launching our loyalty programs, we wanted the flexibility to not be put in a box, in essence, and kind of do our own thing and have different offers and promotions. So we picked the proper strategic partner in Hathaway to do so. And you know, they have claim to fame at other brands as well. Yep. And it's worked out well so far.
Yeah. And there's very few that can deal with the scale that you guys have. And they're definitely one of them. So perfect. Well, let's dig a little bit into kind of why you guys decided to go with loyalty. There's been a lot of people that say, oh, you have to have loyalty. And then some brands that go, you know what? We don't need to have loyalty. Talk to me a little bit about what loyalty looks like at Carl's and Hardee's, and why you guys decided to go down the loyalty path, and where really the business benefits have been as it relates to loyalty. What have you guys seen in the short term, and what are you guys expecting to see long term?
Yeah. So, you know, previous life, there was no such thing as the loyalty before this gig.
Yep.
Right. You had loyal brands because of, look at Better Now, or look at Shake Shack, or ones that don't need it.
Yep. Look at Yard House for that matter. Look at Cheesecake Factory. I mean, you don't need it. If you got lines out the door, right?
Exactly. I think they'll come around, by the way, just my humble opinion. Because
I agree. Cheesecake's already talking about it. So ironically.
Yeah, so is Yard House. I mean, they're doing the same things. Look, for us, loyalty was table stakes. Our competition's doing it as well. Mm-hmm. And if we don't offer a loyalty program, also our guests were demanding it. Quite frankly, for the longest time, our guests were asking to be rewarded for their patronage, and we had to come up with a system to do so. Now, loyalty in its essence is not giving away product for free. I hate people that just say, sign up and get a free burger, and I'm going to give away the world. No, you're cannibalizing yourself. The idea, and Starbucks is like the master of this, and so is Chipotle and others when it comes to loyalty, is the idea for loyalty is you incentivize them to come back in your off day parts or those individual parts of your business that might need to get the uptick. So case in point, we launched with getting double stars. Great. That's enticing you to come back to buy more. There's incentives to come back between a down day part, 2 and 5, whatever we'll call it, and get you know, triple points or get a dollar off a burger. There's different ways to do it with regards to loyalty to really benefit the consumer, because it's all about transactions at that point. They feel rewarded. I mean, look at my, I have like 50,000 Chick-fil-A points with my kids. I get it. I never redeem them, but they're there. And the understanding that I feel now I have a pseudo ownership to that brand and they know me becomes important. And that is the other part of our loyalty system that we really went through, which is, I know we'll talk about CDP in a second. We have to understand our consumer. We never did. We had so much data. We took it. We made assumptions, and those assumptions are terrible. If we can understand, and we're collecting so many data points now, that helps drive product innovation. That really helps drive, you know, user adoption. We can understand who likes what, when, where, and why. If now you're tying into machine learning, like if it's cold outside, I'm going to give you a hot chocolate. Like there's all these different data metrics that I think our industry has never really dwelled into. We all get the things in our email from other retail boxes and other industries. They're contextual. They know who you are because you're giving them an extra amount of data. And that's where I think the loyalty play goes to. It goes outside of just giving stars, which we do. But now you're actually toning the experience of who they are. I've said this on several different panels in the past. The old days of Vegas. I'm not dating myself by saying this, by the way. We'd walk in and a bartender would say, "Hey, Phil, would you like your bullet on the rocks with a splash of water?"
Yep.
Like those days are long gone. But nowadays, you can leverage technology to walk in, you hit a geofence, right? It recognizes your face or your voice for some reason. We don't serve liquor, I'm just saying. It's a good idea for a bar. Like, there you go. You left table four. Like, before you know it, they know your entire history. And you now have this different connection. And that's where I think the loyalty part and the CDP part for our branding particularly is that big unlock. And I've said it since the day one of our strategy has been, mobile order and pay and integration delivery is not the winning combination.
That's not innovative necessarily because everybody's doing that. That's table stakes.
Yeah. Loyalty to us is the unlock that blows our brand doors wide open. Because if you don't have that and your consumers, you have no way to listen to consumers and feedback and such, you're just going to become, you're going to get lost in the rut.
Yeah. Well, and you've thrown out CDP, that phrase, and I think CDP means a lot of different things to a lot of different people, but I'd love to have you riff a little bit about kind of what your definition of CDP is, and then let's talk a little bit more in depth about how CDP is going to get you closer to those retail brands that really know who Phil is, and they're not going to send Phil an advertisement for, you know, something that's not relevant to him, but all too often restaurant brands just, they you know, spray and pray their advertising approach and marketing out there because they have no idea who their consumer is and have no idea what they might want. And then I'll give you an anecdote from just this week. Actually, I was talking to a CMO and a CEO about my own experience with a brand, and it was very different. And we were kind of talking about CDP and where it's at and where it's going. So why don't you define what CDP is, and then let's talk about kind of how you guys are considering using it in conjunction with, you know, the transaction data and, you know, all of the stuff that you've kind of gone through already on the call.
Yeah, so the customer data platform, CDP, really is a nucleus of the guest experience side of it from the collecting of data points. So a lot of people will go install a loyalty program, but they don't have the data points on the back end to tie it all together. Mm-hmm. And that's what the CDP does. The CDP, and we use mParticle, which is a great CDP, allows us to tie in not just the data that comes in off our own apps and websites, but also social data and guest support data. And tertiary, it has all these different plugins and modules that you can go out and capture data. And what happens is we get these points of reference about who you are and how you interact with us. And we can use that from a marketing standpoint to make analytical decisions. We can do modeling. We can do if-then statements, A versus B regression, you know, proof concepts. We can run promotions now and see how they work. We can target market. So really the CDP is kind of like the brain. Right. And it's a central nervous system for the entire loyalty / guest experience that we go off of.
Well, it's taking that digital, it's digitizing that bartender in Vegas who knew Phil and who Phil was, giving you the ability to do that digitally. And again, your guests and your consumers oftentimes are giving you that data, or they're putting that data out on the web for you to mine. And so few brands are doing it. I mean, I think it's amazing that you guys are at that place that you've used that, because, I mean, not that you're not and haven't always been one of those innovative people. It's just amazing to me how little people truly understand how much data is out there to be able to capture and drive a relationship with your guest at the end of the day, because that's what I'm hearing you say.
That's it. So, you know, Jason Seeley and April Shinya, who run the loyalty side and the digital side for marketing, that's their whole goal, is to understand who Jeremy Julian is, mm-hmm. what he likes, where he goes, you know, but more importantly, if you don't come back, I want to know why.
Yep.
Did we screw up?
Yeah.
Right. Or is there a new thing you like? It's understand it, because consumers will give you this data. Right. And you can tie it into, you know, external data as well, and credit card data and all this other fun jazz that's out there. But at the end of the day, it's all about serving guests. You know, Danny Meyer and his light in hospitality, technology should be a tool, an enabler, not an inhibitor. And I think that this is just the you know, the start. You look at full service restaurants, all that open table data, right, that could be pulled in. Like you talked about the bartender. It's there to capture. I think what the issue is that a lot of people and a lot of restaurateurs put CDP at the end of the process, not in the beginning of the process. Yep. And that's an issue, because you have this opportunity to capture this data, but you're not mining the data. You're only using, you're making decisions on very small subsets of information rather than large data sets.
Well, and for years, I mean, you've been doing this for a long time. I mean, you know, what they chose to put on the menu or not on the menu oftentimes had no data backing it up. It was, what did chef come up with? Exactly. And why does he want to? And then they'd go, how did it sell this week? And you know, and you could, I mean, when you were at Yard House, when it was full service, you could directly tell whether that server was out selling that app or not, because they had, you know, 12 incidents of it in the shift and this person had two. So, you know, it was very dependent upon human behavior, not necessarily on whether the data worked or didn't work for that menu item or for that guest. Back to that conversation I had with the CEO, and I don't drink. I haven't drank in 12 years. Many of my audience knows that. I had a brand that launched a beer club. And all I got for the next 6 weeks was the beer club stuff. And I'm like, you have never seen an incident of a beer on my check, because my wife does drink, but she doesn't drink beer. I don't drink beer. I haven't drank beer in 12 years. And so you turned me off from your email messaging and your messaging to my app, because you didn't look at the data that I've already given you. I had the opposite conversation with a similar CMO of, every single time I go out with my kids and the guest party size, because I've got four kids. I know you've got a number of kids as well. Mm-hmm. 9 times out of 10, I get an appetizer. 9 times out of 10, I get an appetizer when I go out with my kids. Because you know what? It's going to come quick. I'm going to be able to get them moving, and then we move on to the entrees, because they may take a little bit longer. 9 times out of 10, I do. Why does the server not walk up and say, hey, you didn't order an appetizer today, Jeremy? Because they knew who I was. I checked in on loyalty, or I geofenced her, or whatever else. And so now they lost a $10 or $12 appetizer that they could have had on my check when they saw the party size was 6. But if you and I were having lunch at that brand and the party size was 2, the CDP could have said, hey, this is probably a business lunch or a business dinner. Maybe we don't offer an appetizer, you know, and it doesn't turn into creepy. And so I'm going to let you riff on that just for a little bit, because I think way too often people are not thinking that way. Facebook, Amazon, Google, they're all doing it. And so few restaurants are even doing relevant offers to their guests, ultimately turning them away from their marketing messaging.
Yeah, agreed. You know, I think you look in the QSR industry, which I live in, and the QSR consumer is not obviously sitting down and taking their kids out for a nice night. I mean, although they do take them out of restaurants, don't get me wrong. But it would be nice, and this is something we're working on, where if you were to order through the drive-thru in advance, the employees know who you are. And it could be a simple flag on the point of sale system. You know, Jeremy has 3 stars because it's a 3-star all-star in our system, whatever you want to call it. Acknowledge you by your name, right? Or vice versa. Throw in an extra cookie because you've got a couple extra kids. I'm not saying we want to do that every time, but I'm just saying there's those kind of habits that you can actually get accustomed to that creates that connection between you and the guest. Because as a guest has so many more options now than ever, especially if you want to be lazy and just be at home and have food delivered to them, right? We're all fighting for that consumer. Yep. And the ones that can really have the emotional connection with their consumer will win.
Yeah. Period. I one of my suggestions, I mean, you and I talked about a pre-show. I'm a bacon Western cheeseburger when I go to Carl's. Yeah. That's my item.
That's your go-to.
That's my go-to. And I think most people, when I say, hey, I want to go to Cheesecake Factory, I think, okay, do I want one of these 3 menu items? If I want to go to BJ's, when I go to Yard House, I think of 3 or 4 menu items. But if I'm now at a Carl's Jr. or at a Hardee's and they know it's me, and you guys have got a new menu item that looks and smells and feels like a Western bacon cheeseburger, but might have an extra 10 points of margin on it, or something else. How do we drive, you know, how do we drive that behavior to say, hey, you should try this that might upsell me an extra 50 cents or an extra dollar onto my guest check without seeming creepy that I'm checking in on you?
It's the bacon analogy. It's funny. We had this debate yesterday. It was funny you say this because I can tell you how many people like bacon based on what they order. If I pushed a promotion,
is that the right answer? Is everyone? No, I'm kidding.
Everyone likes bacon. If you don't, never mind. But like, if I could target, we were talking about this exact thing. If I could target those consumers that like Western bacon cheeseburgers or, you know, a monster burger that has bacon on it, and I could upsell you to double the bacon for 25 cents or 50 cents,
yep,
would you do it all day long?
Nine times out of 10, I would.
Yep. But without that knowledge of that consumer and their buying habits, be great. Now, it'd be stupid if I were to offer you that burger, you know, in a protein style lettuce wrap. You're like, dude, you don't know me at all. What are you talking about? Like, I want a big, healthy, meaty burger.
Don't give me the impossible burger when I'm asking for a Western bacon cheeseburger, you know, 100 times out of 100, right?
Correct. And that's going to be the evolution. So you evolve not just the interaction at the digital menu board or through ads and campaigns. You also then evolve the app itself to change based on the person. So, and we're not there yet. This is kind of like future tense. So you log in and on your history, you get a different home screen that only has the things you like based on your persona, right? It's no different than like when you go to your Amazon carts and so forth. It shows the top things you like to buy.
Yep.
It's not advanced science. We just don't do it well in the industry. But those that can capture that and those that can really relate will win. And it doesn't matter if you're doing burgers or salads or Chinese food, right? Or whatever it might be, we all have our favorites. We all have our go-tos. Absolutely. And I think that we all want to be catered to that way than just being another number in a system.
Yeah. So I'm going to ask just because I'm quite frankly, I'm intrigued. How do you solve that problem? Amazon has figured out a way to have a family. So my wife has an Amazon login and her Amazon filter looks very different than my Amazon filter. And my kids all can request stuff from me and we can approve it. And then it gets into the Amazon cart. Talk to me about what that looks like. Because I think all too often, I find loyalty programs don't take that into account. So my birthday's coming up in a month. My birthday, I've started to get, you know, I literally today, because my birthday is a month from today, I've started getting all of those loyalty items. My wife half the time logs into the app with my login or vice versa. And she, you know, her birthday's in December. She'll get all of the birthday stuff. And again, not looking to just give away free food, but how does the restaurant industry solve that problem that my wife and I both like Carl's Jr., but she likes the, you know, the grilled chicken sandwich, you know, with the bacon and the wheat bun. And I like the Western bacon cheeseburger. She likes the onion rings. I like the French fries. You know, how do we solve that? But how do they know that they're the same person without it being the same credit card and the same household?
So, you know, they're trying to do it. There's certain restaurant chains that are doing like this group ordering where you can actually name the order. I think Chipotle is doing it really well right now, where I can name my bowl for my name and your bowl for your name. And it's tied back under the one main account.
Okay.
That's how they're doing it. They're kind of a tricky way to do it. But you're onto something with regards to tying like family. Like I look at airline miles is a great way to say it.
Yeah.
Like I fly in United, right? And I'm in Global Services and I can put my wife under it and my kids under that as well. And it's all tied back under one. We all have individual preferences, but it's tied back under one overall account. I think we have to get there. But the problem though is that we have so many different, I think, data sets and we have some different regulations with regards to app ordering and such that other folks don't do. Mm-hmm. It's not a perfect science at this point.
Okay.
Yeah. I think you can.
So it's coming though.
It's coming. Like I think you could do it like how Apple did it with like family sharing.
Yep.
I invite you to join my account I'm the owner and invite you, my wife, and you're now tied into that persona. You can have your own account, but it rolls up. That roll up feature, I think, is where we get to outside of the group ordering, because then I can see everybody's history. I
mean, well, and quite frankly, I might not be feeling like that food, but as you know, because you're married, like if your wife feels like it, that's where you're going.
Or that's where you're going. Like it, exactly.
That's where you're going. And that all too often, you know, and so I try not to let her sign up because she gets, you know, swayed by the marketing messages from time to time. I'm like, I don't want that, you know, but ultimately she wins or the kids win when they start to get these marketing messages from these brands. And I think it can change the consumer behavior because ultimately I'm the one that's making the money, but she and the kids are the ones that are making the decision. And so if we don't get them involved in those conversations, they don't end up influencing the behavior, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, look, I I'm going to say this out loud just because I do. Like every Thursday night for us is Chick-fil-A night.
Yep.
Right. If Chick-fil-A could ever design a system that said, hey, Phil, historically, you order the same thing on Thursday. Here's your 4:30 reminder. Quick order now. Go. That's where we got to get to.
Yep.
No, because right now it's me going in, pulling up my favorite cart, remembering to do it. And if I don't do it on time, I'm a dead man when I get home and I'm the food. I forgot to go back out. So that's what I'm saying. It's that kind of persona stuff that we need to get to and activate upon it without being too overboding to the consumer that thinks we're too big brother.
Yeah. Well, because that's always everybody's, I mean, especially now that I've moved to Texas, like, you know, the philosophy about customer data in California is a little bit different than it is in Texas, ironically.
Different in California.
Yes, no, absolutely. What do we not talk about? I mean, we went all over the map and you've shared some amazing wisdom with our audience. So I love, I could sit here and talk forever, but I know we're getting close to time. What did we not talk about that you think is important for our listeners to consider if they haven't already considered a CDP and you know, launching their own app potentially and getting third-party delivery and making sure your tech stack is strong? I mean, you've talked about so much, and it's really like an MBA class on how to run a tech stack for a restaurant brand. So what else are we missing that you would want our listeners to think about after they're finished listening to this call?
You know, I don't know if I said this or not, or we kind of paraphrased it. There's not one size fits all, right? Find your issue you're trying to solve and find the technology that helps solve it. You don't have to go buy out the most expensive, the biggest technology to you don't have to get the biggest and baddest in order, what I'm saying, in order to make the biggest impact, right? Find the delta. Mm-hmm. And sometimes there isn't a delta to be found, right? Sometimes you're running just fine. But it should be technology, and I always use this phrase, and I probably say it too many times, should be an enabler and not an inhibitor. With when it comes to loyalty programs and when it comes to CDPs and apps and so forth, I think it just goes back to basics, man. It really does.
Yep.
Like, what are you trying to accomplish?
Yeah.
Are you trying to solve the off-parting day part? Are you trying to just know your guests better to make better product decisions? Right? Or are you really trying to just keep up with the Joneses?
Yeah, you're trying to build a relationship with them.
Yeah.
You know?
And I think that's probably the biggest thing is sit down and don't try to copy some of the big guys. Right, that have done it. Learn what they've done, but just adopt it to who you are and what your brain wants to do.
I love it.
Because if you don't, you're gonna get caught up in this rut of too much technology, and it's gonna deviate to what you're trying to do, which is take care of the guest.
Yeah, one other thing I would say that has been a consistent theme across your whole career, but you know specifically in your last 18 months at CKE is really the idea of leveraging partners. Mm-hmm. To helping them understand where you're going. You know, you've defined where you're going. And I'm certain you didn't go to one vendor and say, this is where we're going, make it work for me. You went out and talked to people and said, this is where we're going. And once they understood the roadmap, now it was really easy and really clear to say, this is where we're going. Can you help me get there if you haven't already gotten there yet? And they're able to partner with you so that you can partner with them to get where you're going in the right way. And that takes time and effort to make sure that you understand where you want to go, and then going out to the market and figuring out who those people that are that can help you get there.
Yeah, and you know what? And there's some partners that basically said, we can't do it. And I respect those partners. Our plan was too aggressive and they were honest. And there are partners that probably could have done it. We just didn't choose that path. Yep. You know, I think transparency is key. I know that people want to keep their goals and objectives super tight, but you can't build this without the right strategic partnership with everybody involved. And at least get under the hood and explain what you want to do collectively. Because if you don't, how are you ever going to build anything, right?
Like,
if I want to have this shiny object at the end, I need the roadmap to help me build the shiny object. If I don't tell you what the object is,
it's impossible. It's impossible to get there. Absolutely. Yeah. And I see all too many people that go, oh, my neighbor next door has this. I have to have this. And it's like, what are you doing it for? I love that. I tell people that all the time. It's like, hey, who should I choose for a point of sale? It's like, the answer is you don't know because you don't even know what your business is. Explain to me what your business is and what they're trying to do, and then I'll help you choose.
Or what we're trying to accomplish.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Like, the people that are choosing for 3,000 stores are very different than the guy that I have a call this afternoon with somebody that was referred from a friend from college who's opening a bar and axe throwing place. And they're like, hey, I need some help picking a point of sale. And I'm like, you know what? Number one, I'm not the right vendor for you because you're not the right customer for me.
No.
And neither is Par Brink because you know what? They're not, that's not who they are. You know, it's a bar and an axe throwing place. I promise you, it's not. You know, the same thing that fits in there is not going to fit in a Carl's Jr.
Not at all. Right? Yeah. They're unique, right? And that's why there's so many different systems out there. It's like putting a pizza point of sale system into a burger chain. It just doesn't work. They're designed completely different. They have different, you know, modalities than anything else does.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I know we're out of time. I appreciate all of the wisdom, Phil. It's been fun catching back up. I know we just saw each other a couple months ago in Vegas, or maybe not even a month ago, in Vegas while we were out doing a trade show, first live trade show that I'd been to in a while. And it was good to reconnect. So it was awesome to have you on the podcast. To our audience, guys, we know that you guys have thousands, if not tens of thousands of choices of who you guys can listen to. So we appreciate you guys giving us 45 minutes of your time every time we post one of these. Phil, thank you for your time.
No, thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure to talk shop with you, and always good to hang out on a podcast with you, man. Look forward to seeing you in person at the next show.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, and to our audience, guys, make it a fantastic day.
Thanks for listening to the Restaurant Technology Guys podcast. Visit restauranttechnologyguys.com for tips, industry insights, and more to help you run your restaurant better.